but that your work impacts your home life. And so as I think about leading in an organization, I think about how can I help to ensure that I'm leading effectively so that our employees and the people that are involved in my leadership work have a positive experience at work so that when they go home, they are able to be good partners and family members. And from that, those strong ties build within the family unit, and then it carries out into our community, maybe volunteer work, or maybe into doing other kinds of things with kids or elderly people or other adults. And then from that, as our communities grow stronger, our state grows stronger, our nation goes stronger, and the world goes stronger. And so for me, there's a very definite chain of events from the daily actions that I take in my leadership work to creating a just and happy world.
Thank you so much, VP Sherman. President Hutchinson, do you feel that your decisions and actions as a leader are perceived differently because you are a woman?
Thanks for the question, Michelle. Good morning, everyone. Yes, it depends. So let me frame that. So as a woman and growing up through my career and even growing up, I think in my family it started with, what do you know about that, Gail? You're a girl. What do you know about that, Gail? You're a girl. And that really came with me through college and even into some of my earlier employment roles. Well, let's ask the guys to do that, or you know, this or that. So yeah, I do think it makes a difference, but I also know that there are plenty of sponsors, mentors, and allies out there who work really, really hard to empower women. And I wish to empower women, I wish to empower all people, all students. And so, yes, it depends. So now, fast forward, I have the opportunity to be president. And in being president, I had established credibility with this community years ago. And so when I returned to this community 7 years ago, there was opportunity to bring community back together. And that was very important to me. So I was well received as a woman and well received because of what I was known for, which was bringing people together, building team, building community, really building a nurturing family, which is what Chico State is known for, and getting us back on track with that regard. But yet to this day, it depends because there have been people who have refused to talk to me because I'm a woman. There have been people who refuse to interact with me because I'm a lesbian. Not on campus, but in my spaces where I go. So I choose to find those spaces where people are allies, people are supportive, and people can really come together in the way that we embrace diversity on this campus. So just to give a fun fact, and I know my time is short, there were some times where I'll walk into a meeting with colleagues, and maybe they're male colleagues with me. And when I walk in and these people don't know me, they automatically assume that one of the men in the group is the president, not me. So there are times where I'll lead the way and you'll watch when I walk into a room. I'll stand straighter, taller, stronger, and I'll reach my hand out first and introduce myself as president. Or my male colleagues know this about me. They'll wait, and then as people make the wrong assumption about who's in charge, they turn to me and say, and she is our president. So yes, I still get that today. And when I'm not wearing my president hat, but out in the community, yes. But I think it is about how we frame it or reframe it, and this is where we don't sit back. We must lean in. We must be willing to embrace and empower ourselves and empower each other and travel through the world with confidence.
Thank you, President Hutchinson. VP Sensei, who are your role models? What are their characteristics? What have you learned from them? And have they always been positive?
Thank you for the opportunity. And before I say anything further, I really want to thank you all for the opportunity to be here and to say how fortunate I am that I get to stand on the shoulders of powerful women like you to empower other women. So my role models are two people, my dad and my older sister. My dad was a civil engineer, raising five girls as all daughters. And some of the things he taught us was to be resilient, hard work, humility, and also, the most important thing was, he said, create and control your performance. Create and control your performance. Because when you do so, the degree to which you do so is going to allow the people around you to see that it is working for you. And when they see that it is working for you, they will understand that perfection, performance is something that is attainable. And so when I come to work as a leader, that's what I try to do. I try to create and control my own performance and hope that the people I lead can see from my example and emulate it. Let me talk about my sister. My older sister, if I am in IT today, it is because of her. Because when I came to the US 28 years ago, I came to do a doctorate in education. And she got me into IT because she was already in IT and she told me you could do it. And I was like, how does a girl that was an English major and all of these things, how do I get into IT? She's like, you can do it. And sure enough, I did it. So she pushed me. And she pushed me and told me, you can always achieve your dreams if you keep the dreams alive. Now, I took a lot of detour, never got to getting that doctorate, but I'll tell you, in 2019, remembering that I can always follow my dreams and achieve it, I got that doctorate. Now, lastly, what I want to say, have they always been positive? No, this same sister dropped out of college, okay? She dropped out of college, and I was like, how does this happen? But she picked herself up and stood strong and decided that this is not what she wanted for herself. She ended up with a doctorate in industrial psychology. She owns her own consultancy firm in career coaching and inclusive leadership coaching. So when I think about that, she is a strong power center for me as a woman in IT and as a leader. Lastly, I'll say this. Humility is something that I have come to learn a lot from my dad. And one of the things that he said is that humility is not a lack of confidence or not believing in yourself. It is rather the path to effective leadership when you put humility in front of pride. And that leaders who choose pride over humility lack accountability. So with that, thank you all for coming.
Dr. Sarah, what is the most important risk you took in your journey and why?
Thank you so much for that question, and thank you for allowing me this opportunity. I don't think I can go after Monique. I think I should have gone before her. I'll start with a little context, and I'll get to the risk. I know some of you in the audience, and you know that I'm a huge risk taker, and you'll get to hear some of the risk. You can also hear my accent. I come from India. I came to this country 17 years ago. I have been at Chico State for 14 years. When I was thinking about this panel, I started thinking about my grandparents and my grandmother. She was married when she was 12. My mom was married when she was 16. I have a strong history of very powerful, resilient women who are fighters and survivors, and that's where I get my strength from. My mom did two things for me. First, she gave a birth to a girl child. If you look at my community where I come from, the male to female ratio is 10 to 8. So there are only 8 women per 10 men. Not everybody get to be born. So I got my life, and she had a dream that she wanted her daughter to be educated. So she sent me to school early on. I was 4 years old, and I was in first grade. I was done with my master's, and I had not turned 21. She pushed me and wanted this life for me. And education is what transformed me and gave me this opportunity to sit in front of you and be able to speak. When I think of my life, all throughout, I have been very uncomfortable. By choice and by circumstances, both. But today, I have the privilege to choose to be uncomfortable. And every day, I choose to be uncomfortable because that's where the most growth and learning happens. 4 years ago, I made a decision that was very uncomfortable. I'm a professor in the School of Social Work here at Chico State. Love, love my profession. Fits me wonderfully because that's who I am and my personal values are. 4 years ago, I decided to move out of social work and became the associate dean of engineering. That was very uncomfortable. I felt like an imposter, really, for the first year. And I knew as a social worker, because I have great insights in my own behavior and how I feel and think, that that was an internal feeling. I needed to fake it to make it. And I did. And my colleagues in engineering, I saw some of them here, I think embraced me and embraced me really well. I love the College of Engineering, and I think I got the same love back to me. So being there, taking that risk, really helped me understand who I am and what I can do and the power that is within us, that we need to keep on going, be uncomfortable, and that growth will happen and that learning will happen. And just today, I choose to be uncomfortable because of all of you, all the students that are here. I do this every day because I know that the decisions I make, the conversations I'm part of, would help each one of you. And I don't mind standing up for that. Thank you.
I'm an immigrant from Egypt. I moved to the United States about 31 years ago. And when anyone asks me where is home, it's always Los Angeles. So no offense to Northern California, but it's LA. So I have two kids, a 32 years actor and a 29 years teacher in New York City. So I am a mother, I am an engineer, and I am a teacher. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about myself and how did I come up to actually put this together. So when they asked me to give a talk at this symposium, I started thinking about what do I want to talk about, how is my engineering, or how is my work in academia, or work in engineering in general. Those years, about 30 years, and I'm working with engineers in a male-dominated field, how did it make me feel, and what has exactly shaped me as a person? And then I thought about, I found myself always going back to the same point. Something that I just couldn't verbalize before, but my research brought this to me, the confidence gap. So I was always felt like, there's something called confidence gap and instant, and I looked it up and I started looking this up. So I found out like there are so many articles and they have actually definitions, and I really wanted to read that definition for you. So what it says that is, the confidence gap describes the tendency of women to be less self-assured in their abilities than their male counterparts. Another definition says that, or in summary, it's the lack of belief in ourselves. And I was just thinking about it, and it hit me. I was, so all these times that I had to talk to my student and reassure them and remind them that I do have a PhD in computer engineering, I actually do understand what I'm talking about, wasn't something that only because of me, or because the way I talk, or the way I dress, or the way I look. It was something that all engineering, all women, may actually experience. So I started looking and reading some more, and I did my research, actually. So I found this study, and it was very interesting study. There, a group of researchers, they interviewed over the span of 9 years. They interviewed about 1 million men and women. And they did their study, seeing what is the confidence gap, what is exactly going on with this. And they interviewed those people from countries all over the world, from the Middle East, from Europe, from Asia, and New Zealand. So there were so many people together, and they collected the data. And the result of this study, there are 2 points in this study that was very interesting to me, and I have to quote this because it's their work. And it says that, the first conclusion, regardless of culture or country, men have higher self-esteem than women. So this was like, okay, we can understand this, we can see this. I expected this result. The second conclusion, however, was very interesting. It says that the gap in industrialized Western countries is more pronounced than non-Western society. In another word, it says that the gap between how little women think of themselves and how highly men grows in the more developed countries. So in the more developed country, the gap is wider. And that was a surprise to me, to be honest, because I didn't think it was like that. I thought like, okay, maybe in countries less developed, this gap will be more seen. But it was the opposite. It was something that they found. Most developed country, they have this gap. So it made me think even deeper. I was like, okay, what is going on with this? So why do we feel the way that we feel? And I'm not trying to bring you down. I know that it's going to get better, trust me. So I started thinking about all the experiences that I have. And if I can change the slide, please. So years ago, probably 5 years ago, I made my first step to my first visit to the upper side of Egypt, where all of the ancient cities exist. And we saw so many temples. One of those temples is the one that you see in front of you. And this temple, for some reason, that temple and the woman who was responsible for it, just stuck with me for something, and I couldn't verbalize it until I read that study. So this temple is about 5,000 years old, and it's the temple of a queen called Hatshepsut. And Hatshepsut was one of the pharaohs, the first pharaoh, women pharaoh in history. And I don't think that there was others, but we don't know, we keep discovering things. So she built all of this. She built this, and part of this temple is actually carved in the mountain. And her temple and herself was completely destroyed or sort of like hidden from society for years until it was rediscovered in the 1800s. So somehow they tried to cover her completely, but she came back. Why her? What is so interesting about her? She ruled Egypt for about 22 years, and those were the most peaceful time in history, in Egypt's history. And if I can change the slide, the reason she actually resonated with me was these three statues. So if you look at those three, the one on my right, that was Hatshepsut before she became a pharaoh. All her statues before she became a pharaoh, she looked like a woman, she dressed like a woman. And the minute she became a pharaoh, she started beckoning herself like these figures. And you look at it and you can't tell if it was a man or a woman. The body was a body of a man. The face is her face, but with a beard. So she had to do this. She built what you just said, what you just saw. Ruled for 22 years. She was a princess and a queen, and still needed to do this for her people to actually recognize her as a ruler. She needed to appear like a man to be recognized as a ruler. So I thought about it and thought, like, it doesn't matter who we are and what is exactly I come from, and what is my culture, what is it? We already have this gap, so I recognize that. I've been dealing with this for many years, but I couldn't really touch it or verbalize it until I started looking at it and trying to put words into it. So I started thinking about it, and I was just thinking about my own experience as a woman in engineering, or as a teacher in engineering. Well, my classes usually, probably if I'm lucky, I get 3% students, now female students in my class. Sometimes I get 0% female students in my class. So I worked with myself. It's not easy, but at the end of the day, just where do we go from here? How do I do? What do I do? What do we do in general? How do women work into that? So I have like a list of things that I keep telling myself, and I keep doing to myself. One of the things that I actually always think about is, and honestly, I think it just shrinks the gap a little bit, is we gotta fake it until we make it. Just fake it. Be honest with yourself. Just say, okay, well, I don't know. I may not know things, but I will try. Other things that I found it like helped me deeply in my career is doing homework. I always do my homework, and I do my homework to the best of my ability. So I can actually be, when I fake it, I am maybe 80-90% true most of the time. So that's one of the things that I always tell myself. I tell my students, and there are other things that I actually wanted to share with you. I always tell my students, yes, maybe men do make great engineers, but women do too. They do the same thing. We are capable of doing this, these things. One other thing that I always tell myself, I'm coming from Middle Eastern society, I'm coming from where I grew up, I'm always thinking about it in my head, and I believe in it. Be true to yourself. I've always been true to myself. I knew that I wanted to be an engineer, and I actually stayed on that track. So if you are true to yourself, don't worry what people think. Don't worry about how they see you. Be true and be assertive, and do not fear being perceived as bossy or intimidating or whatever terms they would use to describe you, because you have that confidence. We get to exist in our space, so claim your space. Claim your space and don't be afraid of showing people who you are, because you actually, we deserve to have a place in this, in the society, and we deserve to be treated the same way as any other man who works in our field, whether that field was engineering, STEM, or any other field in the world. We are all on the same boat. And one last thing, don't be afraid to share your story, and I really appreciate that you allowed me to share my story with you. Thank you, I'm 14, and for the past 9 years, I have been very enjoying teaching and doing research at this university. As you can see,
gay man. The fear that they would be seen as gay themselves. They argued in court that killing a person was a normal reaction to being perceived as queer. Killing someone else to avoid being judged and shamed by society for being queer. I didn't want to be killed. I didn't want to give these people a reason to do so. So I stayed in the closet. It was safe. The question had been set in my mind, do I live the life I want to have and risk being shamed, rejected, harmed, killed for it? Or do I live the life society wants for me and suffocate to death in the closet? It's a very lonely experience to live in a world of fear and shame, one that I know I'm not alone in. As women, we are regularly shamed by society for our bodies, our tone, our choices, everything. A well-known paradox is this idea that if a woman doesn't want to be sexual, that's a bad thing, and if a woman wants to be sexual, that's also a bad thing. And so we have these literally impossible expectations that we fall short of. And it creates a sense of failure and shame within us. Brené Brown, a well-known shame researcher, described shame as the intensely painful experience of believing that we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. We are frequently inundated with these harmful messages in the context of political debates, social policies, and mass media culture. We've all been steeped in the stew that is these perspectives based on values that we may or may not agree with. A few recent examples. Former President Donald Trump started his campaign describing Mexican immigrants as bringing drugs, crime, and being rapists. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene describes teaching children about the existence of homosexuals and transgender people as mental and emotional child abuse. Kanye West, talking about Lizzo's weight, says it's actually clinically unhealthy, and for people to promote that, it's demonic. And these are just a few examples. However, none of these statements are objective fact. They are cultural expectations being shouted by those with a microphone. And even if we believe these statements are in the wrong, their prominence in our society, in our culture, inform us that there are others who do fully believe these claims and would reject us as a result. Worse yet, we have no way of knowing who out there will judge us and who will support us. There is so much that we are shamed for across so many intersecting identities, that proving to everyone that we are worthy of love and belonging, despite whatever flaws they may see in us, is like a 24/7, 365, full-time undertaking. These social expectations tend to be very culturally specific. And in the US, the foundation of these expectations are often rooted in values we may or may not agree with. Religious belief structures, institutionalized racism, capitalistic productivity, just to name a few. Often our response to feeling flawed, unworthy, is to try to be perfect. We seek perfection as a way to offset our flaws and attain the love and belonging we desire. As a recovering perfectionist, I know this place very well. If I can just be perfect, then no one can say anything negative about me, and I'll be worthy of love and belonging. If I can be a perfect therapist, a perfect person, a perfect partner, a perfect employee, perfect friend, perfect citizen, perfect woman, on and on. If I can write a perfect speech, if I can prove to people that I'm worthy of love and belonging despite my flaws, then I'll be saved. People pleasing, perfectionism over performing, anything to stay safe. Unfortunately, perfectionism happens. Humans are incapable of being perfect. Give you a second. The very tool we reach towards to protect us from the judgments of our society become the chains that keep us trapped, never feeling good enough, always expecting more from ourselves, and slowly eroding away at who we are. Brene Brown says, shame is that warm feeling that washes over us, making us feel small, flawed, and never good enough. We feel shamed in our imperfections and find the culprit for it in ourselves. But in reality, the only thing we fail to do is conform to an outside system of beliefs that is often in conflict with our own internal values and authenticity. So what do? Conform or live authentically? In my experience, the more a person is able to live within their own authenticity and see themselves as they are and not as others will judge them, the greater freedom and joy they find within their own life and experiences. This was a hard lesson for me to learn. When I was 34, I was misdiagnosed with cancer, and I remember on that ride home, a huge mix of emotions, fear, worry, confusion, all of it. But one of the things that hit me the strongest was, I didn't really care. I was living a life that wasn't mine. I was living a life designed to keep me safe, avoid being shamed and shunned. I wasn't being me. And so the loss of that life wasn't any loss to me. This was a scary realization. It pushed me to reconsider why I was living a life I didn't value. I've known that I'm trans since sixth grade, but I'd survived by keeping my gender identity private. But hiding in the closet wasn't living. If I didn't care about this life, what life would I care about? And how was I going to get there? The answer was a lot of pain, suffering, struggle, and grief. The end of a relationship, the end of my life that was, the end of living safely in the closet. It was hard, really hard. But in the end, it was worth it. In the end, I found my own life waiting for me. And within my authentic life, I found something I thought I'd lost, joy. And that's what I'd like to end with today, is joy. We spend so much of our lives looking outside ourselves for acceptance that we lose sight of our own values and desires. And it's within these internal values and desires that joy lives. That feeling of being where you want to be, doing what you want to do, and enjoying every second of it. Although we take this journey alone, and sometimes in defiance of the expectations and value judgments of others, we can also support each other in our journeys to find authentic joy within ourselves. One of the therapists I look up to, a man named Urban Yalom, says it wonderfully. The act of revealing oneself fully to another and still being accepted may be the major vehicle of therapeutic help. To accept another is to help them become who they authentically are. Support others in finding their own authenticity. And seek out those people that will help you find your own. I don't claim to be perfect, but I believe that I'm perfectly me, with all the flaws that that entails. I stand here today presenting at the Women Like Me Symposium, a place I never thought I'd be welcomed or encouraged to be a part of. I'm here in a space that accepts me for the woman I am and values what I have to contribute. The outside world will pass their judgments on me, but right here, right now, in this authentic moment, my heart is full of joy. Thank you.